Welcome to the West Coast Project Podcast for Orange is the New Black, Episode 3 in Season 2, Hugs Can Be Deceiving. My name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
How did you like this episode?
I liked it. I like them all. As far as, you know, comparing it to other episodes and stuff like that, maybe a little bit calmer, but still had a lot of good story in it, I thought. What about you?
It was okay. I liked it. Nothing spectacular stood out about it.
Right.
I did a little bit of my research, and part of my research this time was I listened to one of our competitor/friends podcasts by Bald Move.
Mm-hmm.
They have one called Orange is the New Cast. It's actually really pretty good. If you're listening to this, you'll probably like theirs. You should check it out. But they were talking about the writer, Lauren Morelli, is one of the writers. She wrote this episode for Orange is the New Black. And it turns out that she used to be straight and she turned gay. 5 months after her wedding to a guy, she became the writer and started on this episode, or she started on working on Orange is the New Black, and realized by that work that she was probably not straight, and she became gay. She got out of her marriage, and I think she's in a homosexual relationship now.
Oh, wow.
So some of the stuff she learned during the time on the show, and probably that came up from within her by doing these things and, you know, writing these words for people. She actually created some of the scenes in the show from what she was thinking about in her own mind as a gay woman. So that
and
was,
you said her name is
Lauren Morelli. I'll put a link. There's a little story about it on somewhere Netflix or some not Netflix but Hitflix or somewhere Hitfix. I'll link it so it's in the website.
That's pretty close to the Lorna Morello character. In name, I mean, only.
Oh, yeah, it is, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's at first I thought, okay, so that's not her real name, so what are we talking about here? So, yeah.
I actually cut and pasted a little bit of what she says. So she says, 5 months after my wedding, I flew to New York to start production on my first episode of Orange. And from that moment of my life, fell into a parallel rhythm with Piper's story in a way that went from interesting to terrifying in a matter of months. So pretty cool that there's a real life element injected into the writing that goes into the show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it makes you wonder, is it something that was always there and she just didn't acknowledge it or didn't recognize it or something? I know everybody has their own ideas about how that, you know, nature, nurture, whatever, but I don't think I've ever heard a story like that. That's interesting.
I think sexuality is always there. You don't become one or the other. Hello?
Okay.
That one didn't get through the Bible Belt radiation zone. All right, let's talk about the show. We meet Brooke, Brooke Soso, the hippie chick, named after Brooke Shields and then the babbling Brooke.
Yeah.
She gets a warm greeting at the prison, huh?
Yeah, Big Boo kind of likes her, takes a shine to her.
She gave her the lick, the little finger lick.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see Piper's back. She's getting the murderer respect, it seems like, from people.
Is that what that's called?
I don't know. They were looking at her with kind of like a, wow, you're back and you're to be feared almost. Didn't you see that in the show?
Yeah, I think they were startled. And yeah, there was some kind of respect or something in the look. I wasn't really sure what that was. I was thinking about it, but I wasn't sure. It was odd how she goes away for a month. And we have to assume that they don't know she's been taken to Chicago. Unless, of course, well, no, Alex wouldn't have told them because Alex didn't know she was there. Remember, Alex didn't know she was going. She saw Alex, and Alex was just as surprised to see her there as Piper was to see Alex there. Or that's how they acted. And so we have to assume that nobody there even knows that she went to Chicago.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who knows what for sure, but they're kind of shocked to see her again. They probably thought she did something that moved her through the system on and past them all forever, and there she is again.
Yeah, I'm surprised how much they're keeping from these characters. I don't know if that goes along with real life and how that would be. It seems like, to me, that would be part of the punishment, and maybe even as bad a part as anything else. It's kind of like we were talking about last time, not knowing where you're going and just kind of being at the mercy of whoever's driving, or, you know, driving, flying, whatever, to get you there. No one will give you any information, and how infuriating that would be. And I think we see that play out time and again in this. We assume that nobody in the camp, the prison, knew that she was in Chicago. Everybody thought she was taken to SHU, because she was, and that's evidently known when that happens. But then all this stuff's went on.
Well, she was rousted from SHU, and she didn't even know where she was going to be, so how would anyone else know?
Well, right. Unless Alex knew ahead of time that she was going to be there.
But Alex is gone now. She's right. She never left. She probably left Chicago as a free woman.
Well, yeah, remember she had on her street clothes.
She didn't go back, so why would that word get back? She didn't go back to Litchfield.
Unless Alex knew before they went, but she didn't act like she was anticipating seeing Piper there. Alex could have said, yeah, Piper and I are going to Chicago to testify at this trial to everybody as she was being
that
led away.
That would have been stupid of Alex, right, though, because she kept a secret so that she could pull that quick move on Piper. Alex didn't tell anyone anything, I'm sure.
Yeah. But just how they keep everything from them, that seems horrible to me.
So we see Red, and Red now has to do her own leg maintenance in the bathroom. She doesn't have the crew working on her.
Poor Red.
And then Red sees V. How does Red know V? Do we know that?
Yeah, remember, it flashes back to it. I don't know, I think in this episode, but if not, it's a soon episode, where they were in there before together. Remember, V is coming back.
In the old days, they were together?
Yes.
Okay.
And had the conflicts before.
The what?
The conflicts. They were not the best. They were like rivals, I think, before, when they were together in there before.
Okay. So we see them kind of crossing paths in the bathroom, in the shower, or whatever.
Yeah, she hears her singing, and she can't believe it's her. She walks around the corner, and she sees it, and she's just like, you know, she's shocked.
And then she pretends not to acknowledge that she saw her.
Right.
Till later, I guess.
Right.
And then we see charades. Charades,
yeah,
based on U.S. Weekly information.
How do we know that?
Because they say that.
Oh, okay. I didn't
stuff
hear that.
They've read in U.S. Weekly magazine.
Okay.
So some of the objects of the charade are Steve Irwin, the Crocodile Hunter, Tom Cruise, I think Dwayne Wade, Michelle Williams. How did you like that? And then, of course, poor Crazy is relegated to being the timekeeper, the clock watcher.
Yeah, they're showing, well, right, because they said last time she played, she was hitting herself in the head, and they still can't play Jenga because of her, and evidently she gets a little upset when things don't go her way, which, of course, we find out a little bit later on.
So have you ever played charades, Michelle, at like a family gathering?
Of course, yeah. There's a great game. It's called Heads Up. Have you ever played it?
I don't know.
It's real.
Not familiar.
It's a new thing. It's relatively new. And you put it on, I think it's on iPhone. That's why I asked. And it's called Heads Up. You should look it up. It's an app. And a word comes up, and you hold your phone up to your forehead, and everybody has to act out.
Oh, I've seen that.
Pretty fun. We've done that. But well, yeah, I played charades.
My thought is that some people have unfair advantages in charades, like mothers and daughters. I think there is some sort of a psychic connection where they say like one word and they get it. Like, you know, Louis Armstrong from like one word. It's uncanny. And it seemed like Poussey and Tasty had that connection in this game. They were scoring massive connections.
Well, yeah, and they're like great friends and stuff too. So they're connected that way. You can imagine all the conversations they've had and all that. And then you've got Black Sandy and Janae, and they're not shown to be as close. So, yeah, I agree.
So then we see a flashback to Tasty as a little butterfly bug or something.
No, Crazy Eyes. This is Crazy Eyes, right? Yeah.
She's seeing her adoptive mama and papa having their baby.
Yeah.
And this couple is... They look pretty... They look almost Brooke-like in their hippie-ishness, to me, anyway.
And translucently white.
Yeah, Louis C.K. White.
Yeah. Translucent. And there's Suzanne, Crazy Eyes, and they're meeting her little baby, Miracle Sister Grace.
Yeah, so there you go. There's the hippie. So she's impressed by how she looks like you, Mommy and Daddy. And then they tell her that Mommy and Daddy made her, which puts their, you know, that's a little distinction that might be difficult for a little 10-year-old or six. She's littler there, I guess, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
To embrace, like, I'm different than you. And she goes into a little bit of a tantrum when she can't hold, you know, the baby's taken away from her from being held after a minute or so.
Right.
You have had kids that have probably had those age differences. Is it hard to take the baby away from a new sister?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, they feel like it's theirs, you know, because you tell them it's theirs. Oh, you are going to have a sister. You're going to have, look at this baby. This is going to be your baby. And you do. You kind of say that. I did. And so,
but
sure.
It's a sister. It's not their baby.
No, of course not. But they take ownership in it because it's part of the family, I think. And so I could totally relate to that. You know, this is your baby sister. This is yours. You know, I mean, you don't say this is a baby sister. You say this is your baby sister. So they kind of take some ownership in that. But, you know, kids are like, I mean, just like kids tire of a toy or whatever. I mean, in my experience, they also tire of the baby. Like the lady came over and talked to her and said, when she started fixing her hair and calming her down, and she's telling her that when her mom had her brother, she couldn't wait. And then the baby cried for the whole first year, and she wanted the mom to put it back in her tummy and that kind of stuff. And that's kind of accurate. You know, they, I think kids tend to lose that fascinated interest that they have in the new baby. So, but I've never experienced a child having a tantrum like that over that. And I think it's just showing us that even from a young age, Crazy Eyes had, and I feel bad calling the little kid Crazy Eyes, but Suzanne had, you know, she had coping problems. She had problems when things didn't go her way and acting out problems and stuff. And I think that's kind of what that was to show us, plus to show us her home dynamic, of course.
Well, that little actress was a really good version of the real older Crazy Eyes.
Yeah, she was great.
So back in prison, Piper's getting back on track, and she's meeting everyone, and she looks pretty happy to be back. She's getting almost congratulations for the beatdown that she put down on Pensatucky. But I was going to wonder, is she starting off as orange again now because she's coming back, or is she back in her khaki status?
No, she's still orange. Evidently, every time you come through, because, you know, V's been in there, too. And V's in their little common, I don't know what to call that, like the common room. And she's in orange, too. I think every time you're processed in, you're back in orange until they find a place for you or however they do that in the bunk room.
So how come Piper and V are mixed in with khaki women in the room if they're not the same status?
Maybe because the other women are sick. Do you think that's why? The one woman has the face mask and the CPAP machine to sleep, and the other woman is the chemo woman, and then the other woman is the one that got burned in the kitchen. So maybe it's an area like that. I don't know. I couldn't figure out any other reason for that.
So Piper's getting congratulated, and she meets Brooke, and right away, I guess the cancer chick is Rosa. The bald-headed Rosa. She says...
They call her chemo. That's how I've got her written down.
Okay. She's astonishing how different she looks from her younger days to how she looks in the older days. But anyway, she says something like, it proves you can be either pretty or smart. You can't be both.
Yeah. Is that... That's not... that's not her, right? I mean, I don't mean to be ignorant about that, and I know that sounds probably crazy, but when they morph that young girl into the older chemo lady, it was astonishing to me how they did that.
Yeah, that's that Rosa. That's the one woman robbing the banks, and she always wanted to rob one more bank and get back in action.
But it's not the act. It's two separate actresses, obviously, right?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay.
It'd be probably hard to put it. It'd be hard to film it, and they'd have to shave her head and get her hair back. And I don't know, though. She looks pretty much heavier, too, as the chemo woman than the younger woman.
Well, right. And it's like you said, it's a dramatic difference. But when they did, and I'm sure that it's probably two separate actions, but when they morphed her, I was like, wow. And I actually meant to look that up, but I didn't. So
Lorna gives Brooke the welcome supplies, the toothbrush and soap, I guess, and Piper, too, because she's back. But V doesn't have any of that stuff because the black girls didn't come around. So I guess it's all racial borders that determine who gives you the new welcome kits.
So this is just like a welcome, you're part of our group, right? This is not prison endorsed, I'm assuming.
I don't think it could be. It's just Lorna, the white girl, given the new, quote-unquote, new. Brooke is new, but Piper's not really new. She's new again. But, yeah, they're getting the new supplies because it's white girl to white girl.
Well, and we find out later on that they've pilfered everything that was Piper's. Evidently, when they take you away, your stuff's just like fair game to everybody.
Well,
so
yeah,
she wouldn't have anything. So, okay.
So then we go to the laundry and we see Leanne and is it Gina? Who's the other hillbilly girl besides Pensatucky? Gina?
There's Leanne and Angie, right?
Angie, that's it.
And I don't know the other ones. Yeah, and Pensatucky.
And somebody says something like, Pensatucky, you must be free as a bird. Or she even might say it. And then she says, no, I'm free as a snake. She makes the snake analogy.
Yeah. And she talks about how she wants to aim higher than being down there folding their dirty panties and stuff like that. And, like, she, when they confront her about, you act like you're better than we are, in place of denying it or anything, like most people probably would, whether they actually felt that way or not, she doesn't. She's like, well, maybe I'm, you know, maybe I do feel blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was...
Yeah, she's not smart enough to be conniving like a V would be. She's just blatantly like, I am better than you, and I've got new teeth now. And
she's real upset that nobody notices that, too. And I got to tell you, I don't blame her. I don't blame her. Do you?
They also bring up, excuse me, again, though, in this scene, the you've got to be either smart or pretty. And so Pensatucky says, so you think I'm not smart? Because she must assume, like, well, everyone sees that I'm pretty. And I thought that was pretty funny. They brought that. Either one or the other, again, up with the hillbilly crowd of girls here.
Yeah, she mentions being pretty. I mean, that's not, I don't think that's the first time. She said something like, are you just jealous because I'm pretty and you're not? You know, I mean, she says stuff like that. She thinks she's really attractive, this character does.
Yeah, where a smart girl that's pretty would just be both smart and pretty and not lay it out in front of people.
Evidently, can't be both, Mike.
I guess not. So, where are we? Crazy Eyes is making noises now in her cell, driving Tasty and V crazy.
Yeah, Tasty's not.
What's wrong
really
with
fun.
Crazy Eyes? What's your medical diagnosis, Miss X nurse?
Jeez,
Michelle
well,
from Tennessee.
Nurses can't diagnose, but I don't know. She's. Something psychological certainly is going on with her.
She got attention deficit problems or what? Something like that.
She's very bright, but she has this like inability to cope with things. And see, we don't know at what age she was adopted. We don't know what she went through or any of that kind of stuff. So who knows? If it's something that could have occurred, but she definitely stands out.
So we see V in there. Now, did V get in this jail in Litchfield on purpose, do you think? She tried to get back to that particular spot?
See, I don't know how that works either. That's what I was wondering, because we saw Tasty leave in season one. She's only out for a couple weeks, and then she violated parole. She did something, but she came right back. And then V has been out. We don't know how long. I don't think V has been out of jail. But now she's back and back in the same place. And I didn't know they even did that.
Yeah, so, we learn a little bit about Tasty, that she got out and then she got thrown back in because she messed up for two. She was only out 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, she had no place to go. Remember, she had no place to go and she couldn't find V. And that's when V was saying during this conversation right here that she was having to lay low because they were after her or looking for something or whatever. And so Tasty was just on her own. And for people who first get out of prison, they have to have like an address and stuff. You have to be able to be contacted, your parole officer. I mean, I don't know. I'm speaking like I might know something, and I don't. But I'm just saying that there seems like there's a whole lot that goes into that where you have to have some kind of stable place, and she didn't. And so I think that contributed to her problems. Remember, she was talking about having to sleep in a corner of a house that had six other people sleeping in a little apartment or something. So yeah. She really wasn't having a good time with being out. It wasn't easy for her.
So V explained where she was while Tasty was looking for her. V was on 125th Street, which is like the lower part of Harlem. And Michelle, you and I were on a trip once in New York. I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but
sure,
we've been friends a long time, and that's where we met for the first time in New York. We didn't go up to Harlem. Although that's a pretty historic part of Manhattan. Harlem, 125th Street is where the Apollo Theater is. People might have heard of that. It's an old, it was, I guess, pretty much started out as a burlesque house, but then it's been pretty popular as just a cool theater. But Harlem's a very black portion of Manhattan, where from 123rd, 124th, 125th, and on up north, you get up into like really deep Harlem. It's almost an all-black area of New York. But that's where V was when Tasty was out. And they don't really say where Tasty was, but that's why they didn't connect.
Yeah. Yeah, but Tasty was looking for her. She spent the time looking for her and trying to contact her and couldn't get any contact with her.
So we see Crazy Eyes, Suzanne, give V some advice. I didn't understand it. It was like something about clockwise and counterclockwise circles and round things. And did you get anything out of that?
Well, she was talking about how she needs to not take it personally when Tasty gets mad, because Tasty walked out and she's really upset. V, this whole scene is V's trying to reconnect with Tasty, and Tasty is just furious and feels really let down with her. And we've seen the whole Tasty episode, the episode before, and everything that happened that led up to that. But Crazy Eyes tells her, don't be upset because Tasty gets mad at you. I don't get upset. And then she goes into the whole, I just concentrate on buffing them floors, and she goes into her little movement thing, you know, clockwise. And I think she's just showing how she calms down and copes. That's how I tell.
Little Karate Kid wax on, wax off.
Yes, yes.
So V is orange and out of bounds and gets in trouble, I guess, for being in that area by somebody. And then we see the flashback to Crazy Eyes again as a little girl, and she's being taken by the hippie mom to a party, really inappropriately, I thought, putting that little poor little kid in that situation and that other mom in that situation. But she basically takes a 10-year-old black girl into this white as white chalk party with five or six-year-old girls.
Yeah, six-year-old. So I guess that means she was four before, when she was in the hospital, right?
So and the house is on Abbey Road, which is, you know, it sounds like waspy and white, but Suzanne's the older black uninvited. She's out of sync with the whole party. The mom's making a bad move, putting the other mom on the spot. And she puts the other mom, she guilt trips the other mom. Well, first of all, the mom hosting the party tries to say it's not really the best idea. And then Suzanne's hippie mom says, you're racist or whatever. And she ends up letting the girl, the mom hosting the party lets her stay. But it turns out to not be the greatest. Doesn't turn out the greatest.
Yeah, she shames her into letting Suzanne stay. And it's really sad on everybody. I think Suzanne's mom, Crazy Eyes' mom, I think she didn't know what else to do.
She was stupid. She had good intentions, but a really bad plan.
I don't disagree with that. Because her heart from day one seemed like it was in the right place. She took care of her and she nurtured her and she tried to give her every experience and she tried to push her like, we as mothers do. And it just wasn't necessarily the perfect situation.
It was horrible. Not necessarily perfect. It was horrible. She put the younger daughter in an embarrassing situation. She put Suzanne in an embarrassing. She put the mom. She put the other girls who are littler kids with a big 10-year-old kid. I mean, it was all messed up.
Well, yeah, but they were even bullying to her.
Of course.
I mean,
what did you expect?
I don't know. I mean, it's not like it worked the other way. I didn't know how it was going to work for a minute when they're talking about the story and the younger girls are going, they're each telling like a sentence to the story. And then when it gets to Suzanne, she does this, she adds it. I mean, the little girls are doing little princess tutu stories and, Cinderella type things. And then it gets to Suzanne, who's of course older, and she starts talking about dragons and fires and dying and all this kind of stuff. And so it horrifies the younger kids, and the younger kids are like, no, that's not how it goes, this is not right. And so it upsets Suzanne because she's like, well, dragons are cool. And it's just a completely different dynamic going on.
Well, so they team up, they all call her stupid because she's different. It's just always a whole bad scene. But Michelle, why do you think Suzanne ended up in jail?
They haven't shown us.
Why do you think, though?
I am imagining that Suzanne lost her temper in a situation that resulted in something poor. But I don't have anything to back that up with. Did you think something different?
Grand Theft Auto. I think she was running a chop shop on 120th Street.
I don't think so.
No, I think she probably did the same, what you said. She awkwardly said something wrong in a social situation that got misinterpreted, and it flamed into something worse than it needed to be, probably. Something stupid that got leveraged into something bigger.
Yeah, because she seems like she has a good heart, but she definitely acts on impulse.
Yeah.
Or doesn't act when she needs to. So
she acts differently than what people expect, which is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So we go to the prison again, and we see Daya in the library trying to read up on pregnancy and folic acid. And so Michelle, the ex-nurse from Tennessee, what does folic acid do for a pregnant woman?
I think you actually take it before pregnancy it helps prevent something. I can't remember. Sorry.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So Bennett, the guard, is pretty much a moron. All he does is watch sports. He's tired the next day because he was up too late watching sports. He takes nothing seriously. He's a prenatal idiot. He's, he should be trying to help her figure it out. And the other moronic guard interrupts them. O'Neill, the big, stupid, happy, blonde guy. What's he doing? Running in place or something? He's working
out. Yeah, he's trying to get his steps in. Remember, he's counting his steps. So he's trying to get that in. By the way, folic acid helps prevent neural tube defects. That's what it helps prevent.
Clears that right up.
Okay, good.
So we go to Red, and he's now in the beauty salon in the, I don't know what you call it, but she's with Sophia and getting her hair fixed up. She wants to look fierce.
I got to ask you. Let me just step back for 1 minute. When Daya's talking to Bennett in there, what did you think about that conversation? The way they're talking. It almost seems like, well, she does start it there. She says she's going to tell him that she's pregnant because she's starting to worry about the baby not getting the stuff the baby needs.
Right. And no one course, in the prison knows she's pregnant except her mom and probably Gloria, right?
I think the other Latinos do, maybe, don't they?
Yeah, but nobody in the authority of the prison.
Oh, no. Except Bennett. No. And I just thought it was such a contrast because, like, Daya's big news was that she had special enchiladas that day. And then, you know, Bennett's talking about how he's tired. I mean, they just live this completely separate existence. And, of course, they would. But now she's starting to talk about she is worried about the baby and wants to make sure that the baby gets what it needs. And she feels like he isn't thinking like that. And I'm not really sure what they were thinking when they came up with the idea that they came up with. But I was wondering what a guy's take was on the interaction that they had. She was upset at Bennett because she just wants to make sure that she gets what she needs for the baby.
Well, she's more upset than that. She wants him to own up to it, even to admit enough that would get him in trouble.
Yeah, not that we know that here, but she's starting to lean in that direction for sure. And, but she's starting to poke at him.
I think if Daya was a regular girl on the street that had no legal problems and Bennett was a prison guard and they were just in a normal relationship, she's a cashier somewhere, I think the relationship would be fucked up. I don't think it would have much chance.
Why?
Because Bennett seems like an idiot and he seems like he seems irresponsible and he's just young and he's goofing off playing, watching sports and I don't know.
He's not that young. And
well, he acts young.
He shouldn't be irresponsible because remember, he's done a tour in Afghanistan.
I mean, I don't care. He stayed up all night watching sports. I mean, you don't.
Yeah.
He's not tuned into her needs as a pregnant woman that he made pregnant. He's worried about staying out of trouble. Like, don't tell anybody. Let's let them believe it was that, you know, the other crazy mustache guy.
Yeah, porn stash.
That's what I think. I don't think he's that committed to it. And in real life, I don't think they would last very long, even in much less the prison situation that they're in.
I find myself getting frustrated with this interaction, and I'm not really sure why. I guess that's why I was asking you, because I get frustrated at her because I'm not sure what she expects him to do. Does she want her baby's father to be in prison? So there's no one to take care of this baby. And I get frustrated at him because it's like he's satisfied to not handle it. There's just no good answer to this that I can come up with. And I guess that rubs me the wrong way.
So why are you mad at me? I'm not part of that.
I don't know. You're a guy and I'm just mad. No, I'm not mad.
I think it's really dumb for her to want him to step up and say, you know what, I'm the father. I'll take my licks. That's just stupid. He needs his job. She needs the money from his job to help her with whatever they end up doing. What is she in for? How long is she in jail for?
I think she said she's got like 2 more years or something.
Yeah, so just write it out. You know, give it a shot.
But what's going to happen after? You know, you have porn stash, and I don't know. I don't want to give too much away because I can't remember what. Well, so I just won't. I won't talk about that. But the baby is not his, and that was the whole point of.
The baby is his, right, Bennett's?
No, the baby's Bennett's. It's not porn stash.
Yeah.
But porn stash.
The worst thing that could happen is if Bennett admitted all this and he got in trouble. That would be horrible.
It would be horrible.
That would satisfy her little need, her little personal need to be like, the man stood up for me. But that's just her personal need. That ruins everything else in the scheme of things.
And who's going to care for this baby if he goes away? Her mother's in prison, you know? I mean, who's going to care for this baby? This baby's going to end up in foster care. I don't know. I just don't know what. It's just like her emotional need for him to step up and be the man and take responsibility for this is overshadowing any kind of practical need for the care for this baby. And I'm sure a lot of people feel completely different about that, and I don't want hate mail or anything because
there's always Larry and Polly. Don't forget them. Anyway, Red's in the salon. She wants to look fierce for purposes of intimidating V, and Sophia's helping her do that. Sophia's funny.
I love Sophia.
Fierce as in rrr, rrr. That was funny.
That was good. But we find out Red's coming back. The Red that we knew. She's not going to be this, needs to color her hair, her fingernails are chipped, you know, maybe her legs aren't shaped, whatever. She's going to come back because she has to, because she has the competition.
Yeah, I like with Red, too, that it's a slow build. It's not like right into V's face, like, you're not, don't try to fuck with me. You know, she's like, it's a slow, strategic build, it seems like.
Yeah, well, with both of them, yeah. And then we go to Morello on the phone. Oh, my gosh. I could not breathe when I was watching this. That was so bad. That is so bad. She's talking to her sister, Franny, who's telling her that Christopher's getting married. And, of course, she got Fisher. She's staying over there, and she's listening. And she listens, she says, because it's her job. But then I think we find out later on that maybe that's not the only reason that she's listening. But,
yeah, she also listens to the recorded calls, too.
Well, later on she does, I think. I don't know if she's doing that yet. But, yeah, I mean, she really gets into this listening, like the whole story. But
Christopher's going to get married and move to Albany, which is an hour from the prison.
Yeah, and Morello, she's sobbing, and she wants to know when, and she's shaking, gasping, she's choking back tears, and she's, like, screeching her words out, and she's white-knuckling this phone. And I cannot imagine how that would feel to be in a place like that and get that kind of news. And I thought she did a great job of acting that out.
Well, you don't go Jessica Simpson when you got Rihanna, Michelle.
That's what I hear. That's what I heard.
And Fisher, and then they also didn't they steal the same day, the same wedding day as their.
We don't know that yet, but yes,
they do.
Yeah, she's asking her sister when, and then she says, you know, she's like, she could get a paper, but then she kind of goes nuts, you know? She's talking to her sister, and she's like screaming that she could hurt her or something, and then she's like, no, I'll be good, I'll be okay. So you see this kind of rage come out in Morello that I haven't seen before, and that was startling to me, but I was able to, at that point, attribute it to her grief and...
Yeah, you can see why she's probably better off in prison after what we see that she does in a couple episodes. Yeah. So, Fisher says everything okay, like, even though she knows the whole story, everything's crap. Mm-hmm. What do you think Fisher's thing is? You alluded to the fact that she's either into listening to other people's problems, or what do you think her deal is?
Well, I don't think she hadn't started that yet, had she?
Doesn't matter. Just what do you think it is? Spoil it.
Spoil it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that she's living vicariously. I think it's a soap opera to her, and she really enjoys hearing these people's stories. And I think when she's standing out there listening to them on the phone, she's only hearing one side. And see, she points out later on, too, and it's not a big spoiler, I don't think, that she understands Spanish, too. So she's getting one side of everybody's story, but she never hears the other side, and I think she's just curious.
Well, we only heard one side of Lorna's call, right? We knew the whole story from one side.
Right. Right.
Why, do you think Fisher's attractive?
Yeah, when she takes her hair down and everything, she's pretty cute.
I think she is, too. I was just curious. So, go ahead.
She's a little severe looking with the hair pulled back in the bun and all that. But when she lets her hair down and kind of, you know, relaxes when we see her out, I think she's cute.
When she's out rocking Caputo's band. Luscek.
Luscek, yeah.
All right, so next scene, we're jumping ahead a few episodes. So next scene, we see Larry meeting the reporter who's digging into the fraud or the misappropriation of money at Litchfield. And that was a pretty interesting scene. It told us a lot about Larry and his need for vanity. And, you know, you need me to help you, of course, because I'm a writer. I like this little scene between Larry and the guy from NPR, or where was the guy from? The right.
I don't remember. He said it was an investigative journalist. I don't remember if he said where. His name was Andrew, and I was so put off by Larry in this. He's not even speaking to Piper at this point. They're not even talking. And this guy, Andrew, wants Larry to get Piper to speak to him. And in place of saying, look, you know, Piper and I are having our own issues, he says not only can he get the scoop from Piper, so to speak, but that he also talks to her counselor, Healy, all the time. And we find out he's only talked to Healy that one time, I think, when the only time they've shown us that I can recall, when Piper was thrown in the shoe, remember?
Yeah, this isn't about any of that, though. This is about Larry. Larry's an aspiring writer. This guy's already an NPR writer. So he's like, I can do what you're doing. I know a lot. You need me to help you write this. It doesn't matter what he knows or doesn't know. He's just angling for his own advantage.
Yeah, it's at Piper's expense. And I felt like he's done this more than once. And particularly now, since things aren't good between he and Piper, I can't stand this. How can he further his career? You know, she hadn't been in there how long? Just weeks, or certainly not, but just a few months.
How long has it been? A couple months? From the very beginning of her start of the time, it's only a couple months?
She had 15 months total. And at the end of this whole season, she has 8 months left. So we're to assume that some time has passed in this season. So, you know, I don't know. But at the most, it would be 7 months. At the most.
Yeah.
So it hasn't. But at that point, when they were still getting along and all that, I mean, time passes. You know, she was in the shoe for a month. So time passes. And when they were okay and he was selling his story, so to speak, about her and about poor him, which I felt like he kind of victimized himself in it, in that, you know, he, poor Larry, he had to be without his significant other and, you know, this kind of thing. When Piper's in there going through this, but he used that as a springboard to
I know. We don't need to establish that Larry's a shitty boyfriend. We already know that. This is establishing that Larry's just he's got vanity. Like, you need me. I'm special. I want to be a writer. I could be a good writer just like you. We already know he's a bullshit, crappy boyfriend. From look at the crap he did with Polly.
Yeah, but it's not just the crappy boyfriend. It's just the crappy person, isn't it? Because, I mean, this isn't just about being a boyfriend. This is just about using a situation to, I don't know. I was really put off with that. It was a good scene, but I was really put off with Larry about it. Andrew seems like he's doing investigative journalism. That's what they do. They investigate situations. And Larry is holding himself in a higher, than he should be. And
he'd have done that with anything either related or unrelated to Piper, though. That's just him wanting to prove his worth as a writer, as a career person.
Yeah, but at first it seemed like maybe he wasn't going to do that. When he was first asked about doing this kind of stuff with Piper, he seemed reluctant, and he seemed like he cared that it might not be the best thing for her. And then it seemed like that just went out the window so fast.
I don't know. Remember when he didn't wait to watch Mad Men for Piper to get out? He's a shitty guy.
I gotta tell you, out of everything that he did to Piper at the end of season two, well, my daughter's not quite at the end of season two, but my grown daughter I'm watching this with, but she's like, the worst thing Larry's done is watch Mad Men without her.
There you go.
That's funny.
See?
And it is. It's horrible. I couldn't believe he turned that on. We watched that, and that, to me, told us everything we needed to know. Thank you. That's exactly right.
So, Michelle, I have bad news for you.
Okay.
Prison is gluten.
Prison is gluten.
Do you want to talk about your website?
No.
Might as well give it a plug.
No. It's not ready for a plug.
Give it a plug to that one guy who likes you on Twitter.
I'm doing actually a whole other website, so
All right.
I'll plug that when it's time.
I see you just updated it in like October.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's not it. I'm doing something entirely separate. So.
Well, Gloria says prisoner's gluten. You eat what you got. You don't eat what you want. You eat what you got.
Yeah, even if it's on the Today Show, you're getting gluten.
And
don't do the time.
V learns Gloria's weak spot is cigarettes, which plays out a little bit further into the episode.
Yeah, how strong? I mean, I'm not a smoker, so how strong of a hold for someone who's been in there that length of time to have that kind of draw over cigarettes, over tobacco? Isn't that crazy?
Probably pretty strong. I don't smoke either, but that's it. That's probably pretty strong. Next, we learn that Nikki and Piper are snatch sisters. They've had sex with the same girl, and that makes them snatch sisters.
Okay.
That girl is who?
Alex,
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Any others?
I don't think Piper's been with any other
Probably
thing.
Not, but Nikki's been with everybody, so.
And they show it blatantly, yeah.
So we also learn, Nikki brings Piper down to earth a lot here. She tells her that Alex was hurt by Piper. And Piper tries to counter by saying Alex Voss is the wolf that eats the lamb. And Nikki says you can't blame her for that because lamb tastes good.
Yeah. Lamb's good eating. But Nikki believed Alex, just like Piper has believed Alex. We get into the same situation. We have these characters in here. V is one of them. Alex is another one that's able to manipulate situations brilliantly. These are smart, smart women who can manipulate people into believing them. So Alex still buys. I mean, Nikki still buys that Alex was genuinely hurt over Piper. And I don't know that Alex wasn't hurt, but I mean, the stuff that Alex has done to Piper, she got her put in prison to begin with. She ratted on her. Then she, you know, is told the truth about, what's his name? I never can remember his name. The drug dealer. Kubra. That she had just told Piper not to tell. And then she gets out of prison early because of it. So Piper's left to sit in there where Alex is out. Even though Alex was the big guy in the thing, and Piper was just, according to what they showed us, nothing. So she completely has manipulated the people around her. But I think they're just showing us that she manipulated Nikki, too, into believing that. Did you think Alex was genuinely hurt over Piper?
Yeah, probably a little bit. I think Nikki's my favorite character now. I think she's one of the smartest people in the whole thing. And she's certainly been given the smartest, the most intelligently written lines. You know, she says, I'm the star of my own movie, and you are too, and we all are. And you have to look at it that way. I mean, that's just really a smart way. And she's very honest, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they show her as being pretty graphic and pretty, you know, but I actually do like her a whole lot. I like her. And we have Sophia walk by, and she stops and looks at Piper and says, you don't look like Omar in The Wire. Remember that? She makes that comment. I thought that was pretty funny that she brought that up, because evidently the story's going around about the fight, because see, this is the first time people are seeing Piper since the fight. She's in, I mean, not everybody, but for the general population, she's in the lunchroom. So.
Yeah, and they have nothing else to do but speculate and talk and gossip. So I'm sure that story got worked itself up to whatever status.
Well, right. She looked like Omar in The Wire, evidently, is what it worked itself up to. But they're all staring at her in the cafeteria, which, of course, makes Piper self-conscious. And the fact that Piper's self-conscious that everybody's staring at her makes Nikki think that she's a little self-absorbed. So, I thought that was interesting.
Piper ponders whether her life matters even if she dies, and Nikki gives her the advice that it doesn't really matter. You're just a Cheerio in the big box of life, but I like you, so it would matter to me.
Yeah, that was kind of sweet.
So then we see V cozying up to Black Cindy to try to get her to get those secret stash of cigarettes from the electrical outlets.
And she tries to cozy up to her, but Black Cindy is not having it.
Yeah, do you think, and then Suzanne overheard all that crazy eyes. Do you think that V offered that to Black Cindy in order for Suzanne to overhear it?
I didn't necessarily think so, but knowing what I know now, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put it past her, don't you?
Or no? Yeah, I actually heard that on the Bald Move podcast, too, that thought. And it makes a lot of sense that she would to try to manipulate Crazy Eyes, but
right.
She may have just been feeling out Black Cindy, too, to see if she was going to be an ally.
Well, right. I think she was trying to make contact with
everyone.
Well, with all the black women, certainly, because she's trying to get her group going, kind of. And so I don't know. I don't know if doing that with, if asking Black Cindy was her way of connecting with her, or maybe letting her know that she had some connections or something, or if it was something that Crazy Eyes was just supposed to overhear. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so the next scene is the one we've already spoken about where little Tasty tells the dragon story about the princesses.
Yeah, Crazy Eyes. You keep calling her Tasty.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Crazy Eyes, yeah.
Yeah. Suzanne.
And so the next scene after that is Brooke crying and keeping everyone awake and Chapman trying to help her, trying to help her. And we find out Brooke was a walnut farmer in Ohio, a very hippie-ish sounding job in Ohio. And she talked about her friend Meadow.
Yeah.
And her friend Meadow told her to be a grasshopper in life and link up with the synchronicity of all life and other some such hippie crap. but Chapman admits to Brooke that she's not the murderer and that prison won't be as bad as it seems right away and stuff will be more normal after a little while and pretty much not to worry.
Yeah, she tells her that she cried her whole first night too and you just need to breathe and it gets easier. And then I thought something that she said was really profound and I'm a little embarrassed that it's profound, but I really thought it was. She said, "Everything ends, Brooke. Even prison. Try to focus on that."
That's profound.
I mean, it was to me. Occasionally, I'll hear something and a little thing kind of dings in my head, and it's not often that happens because I've heard a lot. I'm old, and something kind of did. It's like that's true. Everything ends.
Those are the little bells at the ends of your hat.
Well, or every time a bell rings, yeah.
So we see Larry's dinner date with his new potential girlfriend, I guess, right? The pediatric neurologist.
Yeah.
Did you come across any pediatric neurologists in your career as a nurse?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have we have a big pediatric neurology center.
Were any of them women that were as ball-bustery as that one?
Back when I worked, I don't remember any women doing it. I don't know if they do now, but.
So she asks about Piper, but before Larry can even answer, she tells him that she knows all about her from Google.
Yeah. And from Larry's dad. Evidently Larry's dad's has kind of set this up and sharing this. And you can tell Larry's completely, but I mean, gosh, she's almost demeaning, isn't she? She asks Larry if he's working on anything right now, and he says he's trying to figure out his options, and she's like, "Oh, that's great. It's refreshing that you're not doing anything." You know, she says, and she goes into the stop pretending your podcast is work, right? And
she says that about other guys that she's met, yeah.
Well, right. She's comparing him to other guys who have quote-unquote ambition.
Well, let's see that bitch do a podcast. Damn it.
Right? Yeah. But then she goes on and says that a guy without ambitions at the top of her list and a guy will stay home with their three kids while she takes care of other people's kids.
Yeah.
And then she asks if he wants kids because his Facebook profile doesn't say.
She just wants a pushover Patsy for her boyfriend.
She's very aggressive for a first date where they've been waiting 45 minutes to eat, by the way.
That's better. It gives you time to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So what's Nikki is still building up on her sex conquests, I guess. She's
It just shows her and a girl in the shower. That's the whole scene.
That's all you want to talk about. I want to talk about more.
You go for it.
Well, in the same area of the episode, we see that Crazy Eyes is checking the outlets that she overheard from V about where secret little treasures might be hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And those outlets, Michelle from Tennessee, those might as well have been Fort Knox for Crazy Eyes. She is flummoxed on how to get inside an electrical outlet. And all she really needed was a screwdriver.
Yeah, but remember, you can't get screwdrivers. Remember?
But she doesn't even attempt to find a coin, or she rams stuff into them. She tries to pull them off the wall. She hammers them with something. She just doesn't get the concept of a plate being screwed onto a box that needs to be.
She's definitely not showing the best think ahead skills, for sure.
But by some miracle, she gets one open and finds some old cigarettes.
Yeah, we don't know they're old, though. We don't know.
We do. By looking at that box, you could see it was all kind of old, and I don't know. I could tell it was old.
Okay, I did not know that they were old, stale cigarettes. Gloria didn't know later on, did she? Until
she smoked them, she knew.
Right. But I don't know. I didn't know they were old, but I did know.
But you could grasp the whole concept of V having stashed little treasures from her earlier time there, or however long ago. Right. You know, it wasn't a week before. It was years ago.
Right.
And that was what she wanted Black Cindy to go after. But so Crazy Eyes finds those and gives them, I guess she gives them to V, right?
She hasn't done that yet. We're not there yet.
So
next we go into Bennett.
Yeah, he's picking on Daya at her bunk.
He finds an excuse to scold her so he can talk to her, it seems like.
He gives her the little present of a pack of spinach.
It's organic.
He found out that spinach has folic acid.
Yes, it does.
But she's not a fucking rabbit, Michelle. She wants pills or whatever folic acid comes in.
She wants the prenatal vitamins because they encompass more than just the folic acid. And does he expect her to eat a whole bag of spinach every day? She's not a rabbit. And girls dream of guys leaving them gifts underneath their pillow, but it's not a bag of spinach. Come on, Bennett.
Why not?
I'm not sure.
So, I don't know. Did we get some of these scenes out of order? Because that...
No.
Okay. All right. So, he somehow manages to charm her at the end of all this by asking if she can meet him at the spot later. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why in the world of all good God's common sense she's charmed by this idiot's plan, but she likes the fact that he asked her that.
Yeah, she smiled. That's what I actually wrote down, too. He asked her to meet at their spot later, and she, out of all this, because she's concerned about her baby, and she's, you know, and honestly, that would be horrible to stand there and have the guy come up and say, you need to do this, and you need to do this, and then, you know, whisper sweet nothings to you underneath that.
Yeah.
That would be horrible. But then she smiles at him. I don't know.
So then we see Crazy Eyes giving a toothbrush to V. V finally gets her little entry pack to the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And Crazy looks afraid of Piper, right?
Yeah, she runs in the room, and then she sees Piper in the room. She sees V, and she sees Piper, and she runs out of the room and starts smacking herself in the head, which is her.
But she knows what happened. She knows what happened with Pennsylvania, right? And she knows enough to not be that afraid of Piper. I thought, anyway.
No, I don't think we know. I mean, she just thinks Piper's mad at her. And she thinks Piper, she's, you know, we find out at the end of this episode that, you know, the stuff that we find out. And she thinks Piper is dangerous. I don't think anybody expected Piper to actually defend herself against Pennsylvania with the rage and
right.
The amount that she did. So I think Crazy Eyes was just a little startled by that.
So V gives Crazy Eyes the advice that black women should be running this place, and that she sees her, she knows Crazy Eyes, and that everyone else underestimates you, but not me. I get you.
That's what she tells her.
Then do we
at
see
at the end of the day? She says you're a garden rose, and Piper's a weed. And that garden rose comes back later, and I mean, Crazy Eyes is just puffing up, you know. I mean, you can just see her. It just builds her self-esteem. You can see it straightening her backbone as V is talking to her. And then they embrace, and they don't just embrace. They embrace, and Crazy Eyes grabs the back of V's shirt and just squeezes the material. You can tell that she has just needed some kind of affirmation from somebody, and now she's getting it. Sorry.
No, that's that was okay. Just, so then we see more Nikki sex. Am I Groundhog Day with my notes here? Is there
You're
more?
You're not. No. Nikki's in the bathroom stall with a girl. Big Boo's outside the stall, and she's critiquing what's going on in there. And
yeah, she doesn't like her technique. So do you think, Michelle, that this is male behavior, that this whole Boo versus Nikki, it's like what guys would be like if they were... You know, you think they're trying to, like, infer that this is like male and female behavior?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You'll have to tell me about
well, because Boo and Nikki are the aggressors, and some of these women seem to like the fact that they're the aggressors and like being pursued by them, right? Like the girl in the stall wasn't being forced to do anything. She was like enjoying it.
Well, she was enjoying the act. I didn't see anybody enjoying the pursual necessarily. But as far as the women talking, I think men might be surprised that women talk some. So I'm just not sure.
All right. Well, that was more Nikki sex.
Whole scene.
V meets Gloria and gives her the cigarettes, I guess, right? And
well, yeah, she's bragging on Gloria's salsa. She goes in and she's doing her schmoozing and she's doing her sweet talking and her manipulating, and she's bragging on Gloria's salsa, and she's bringing up places that have the best salsa and how it seems like Gloria just tried to mimic that salsa. I mean, she's going on and on. So...
Yeah, so V not only wants the black contingent, she wants the Hispanic ladies, too, on her side.
Well, yeah, they're both kind of vying, aren't they? V and Red, as this goes on, for the Hispanic backing, kind of.
So she gets the cigarettes, and I guess we don't know yet that Gloria's going to realize these cigarettes are, like, 15 years old or whatever, but...
Mm-hmm.
We see Caputo now with a meeting with Chapman and Pensatucky.
Yep.
Pensatucky's still shamelessly flashing her new teeth to everybody.
I don't blame her. I don't blame her. And she's so upset that nobody noticed. Okay. People would notice that because her teeth were so bad, but nobody says a word. If somebody would just say, wow, your teeth look great, she would just... feel so good, and we don't see that one time, so I feel bad for
Well,
her.
That makes it more interesting in the show, I think.
It does.
So Chapman and Pensatucky are listening to Caputo, and I think Caputo just wants to make them both realize that there was fault found on both of you, and this case is done, it's over, don't expect anything else to come of it. Because it looks better that they both fought each other equally, right? Even if they didn't.
Well, right, because then there's no reason to punish one above the other or whatever. But honestly, Pensatucky came after her.
Nobody's
pointing that out. With a weapon.
We all know that.
I know. But nobody's pointing that out. Chapman, Piper didn't start that.
And Pensatucky has new teeth. Did you know that, Michelle?
She just finished it. Yeah.
So Caputo makes them hug and make up, and that was fairly uncomfortable. Pensatucky seemed to like it, I guess, but Caputo thought he was going to like it, and he started to masturbate, but then he gave up on it. I don't know, was it too easy? Do you think he thought this is just too easy, or this is just too wrong, or what?
Well, I'm not sure if it's just too... I don't know. I'm not sure. He just couldn't go through with it. But I think it might be important to point out that Caputo goes into how he feels like it was a fair fight. And I think this is where Piper realizes that they don't know what happened to her, because Pensatucky didn't get one lick in. And I don't think Piper knew that they didn't know at this point what had actually happened. Because you can see kind of like a realization come over her face that...
But why would that even matter? What they knew, that fight's over.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter until the crazy eyed stuff comes up later.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't really get that it mattered too much. I mean, the other guard knew what happened, right?
Mm-mm. Haley didn't even know. Nobody knew about Crazy Eyes. Remember, Haley just turned around and walked away. Haley let Pensatucky out there with the weapon.
So how did that scene end with Pensatucky, Piper, and Crazy Eyes? Did Crazy Eyes get caught?
We're not there yet.
Well, how do you know?
That's at the end of this episode.
Okay. All right. Well, so next we see Red versus V in the old Wild West showdown, gunfighter music and all. But they, as we said before, they do their slow build by hugging each other, hugging it out. Like Red says nothing's changed and V says everything's changed. But they know each other and they see right through each other and their BS and all right. that. Do you think they met on the street somewhere? Or do you think they met in prison only?
No, I think it was in prison. They show us some flashbacks to the scenes of V and Red later on, but I don't know. V kind of goes into that she just wants to read her books and do her time quietly and everything, and Red, of course, doesn't buy that for a minute. I was hoping when they hugged that it was more of a friendly rivalry.
No way.
Well, I didn't know. You know, I mean, you know, you kind of, again, I get sucked in by V. I get sucked in by her every time. I get sucked in by the things she says and her manipulation. She can manipulate me. I believe her. And I kind of did.
Well, I hope you don't end up in prison.
Thanks. Me too.
So, Crazy Eyes we see in Graduation from high school the year 2000, she's supposed to sing. And we know she has a good voice, but she can't bring herself to sing in front of all the people.
No.
And then we see the flashback. It was like a flashback of a flashback. Right. Where in prison, and I guess it was the night of the fight, right?
It was. It was the night of the Christmas pageant, the night of the fight
between Piper and Pensatucky and Crazy Eyes all had a slug out. Right. But they're all singing, including Crazy Eyes, who's just kind of singing along kind of melodically, I guess, not the lead or anything.
No, but she was supposed to have a solo. And remember, she stopped and she stood there and she couldn't do it. She did exactly the same thing that she had done back at her graduation. And then the mute lady actually piped up and started singing. And when the mute lady started singing, Crazy Eyes starts smacking herself in the head, which, of course, is what she's known
for. Oh, and then she got fired up, Michelle. She got fired up. She was singing in the hallway. She felt the presence of Jesus.
She comes out, and she is happy. She is so happy.
And she can sing. She had a good voice.
And the Latino...
Flaca. Yeah, Flaca and her friend made fun of her by slapping their heads.
Yeah, they're talking about, you know, she's saying that she felt whatever in the room. I can't remember what she said.
And presence of Jesus.
Is that what she said? And then they said, are you sure you didn't just feel pee running down your leg? Because, you know, they're smacking themselves in the head. And it was just really cruel. And so she runs outside.
Right, and she views Piper as mommy.
She runs outside and she sees Piper beating up on Pensatucky. She's on top of Pensatucky at this point, and all she sees is blonde Piper. And we know her mommy was blonde, and she just went back through this, no, mommy, I can't, you're always pushing me, no, no. And she takes it out on Piper.
Yeah. So Piper and Pennsylvania are laid out equally unconscious in the courtyard. But that appearance of making it a mutual fight really ended up helping Piper. Piper Dandelion.
Yeah, that's kind of sweet.
So then, and back in real, so that was some sort of a medium flashback, flashback. So we go to real time again, and Crazy Eyes goes to apologize to Piper, and Piper reminds her that she actually saved her from a bunch of trouble, and that she, Piper, should be grateful to Crazy Eyes for punching her.
Right, because she's the one that made it look like a fair fight, but I think this is where Piper realized that nobody else knew that, because, or not here, but when she was in Caputo's office, that's what I was talking about. I don't think she knew that they didn't know the whole situation before, and they still don't. And so here, she kind of got the realization, okay, Crazy Eyes came out and hit me, but nobody knows that, so they think Pennsylvania hit me, and that's what's making this okay. This is what's keeping me from really being in a lot of trouble. So that's when she goes to Crazy, you know, when she's talking to Crazy Eyes, and she's so grateful to
her. I still don't know why that matters that much, but I guess that's the truth of all of it being totally unfolded. So Piper invites Crazy Eyes to a movie, which she wanted to do before, and Piper turned her down, I guess.
Yeah.
And so Crazy Eyes.
Crazy Eyes turned her down. Well, before Piper had.
Yeah. So now Crazy Eye says, no, thank you, Dandelion. I'm a garden rose. Like what V had told her to stand up for herself. Yeah. And so we see Bennett putting his leg on in the, getting his groove on, getting his leg on in the locker room. And I guess that's where he comes up with the idea of smuggling through his leg, his hollow artificial leg.
Yeah.
That's the problem with, kind of watching all these at once is you don't know when, I can't remember all the distinctions between the different episodes. Like I was waiting for the next scene to be him walking through the detector with the leg, but that's in the future.
Yeah.
And we see Nikki next keeping her love conquest notebook, big boobs, boring, all these notes she's making about these girls she's having sex with.
Yep. It's all just conquest to her. But she points out it's not here, it's some future place, and I don't think it's a big spoiler, but she points out that she's traded her drug addiction for that addiction.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting. But so, yeah, she is writing about it all. I mean, a little graphically.
Then we go to Lorna. She's crying, and Nikki's trying to help her, and Nikki's a good person, even if she's a little, but got a little bit of a freak on. She's a good person.
She is. She's really sweet. And remember, Nikki and Lorna had a thing, remember? And then Lorna cut it off because she said she had to prepare herself or not be doing that because of Christopher.
So I don't remember that, but it doesn't surprise me that.
They had quite the thing. And Nikki didn't want her to cut it off, didn't want to break it off, but she did. And still, Nikki goes up to her and does that, which I liked it even more because of that. So.
And Christopher's with another girl. Their wedding day's the same day. And she's a fat whore. She's just a fat whore, that girl, that new Christopher girl. More vanity. Vanity for Lorna. Like, I can't be out. I can't be more. Somebody else can't be more desirable than me in prison.
Yeah, she's just completely devastated.
So Brooke is lounging comfortably in Chapman's bed in the next scene.
Yeah.
And Brooke says that Chapman, I guess, is just like Meadow.
Yep.
But Chapman doesn't like that for some reason. She warns her to stay away and not to give her any more advice. And she's not her friend. And she's not like the new Meadow. And she's a lone wolf. What did you think of Chapman / Lauren Malvo?
Yeah, that's actually what I thought about. You know, I thought, how many more character to wolf references are we going to have that we podcast about? But I think Piper was just, she was bitter. She had just come, we take it from that interaction with Crazy Eyes, where Crazy Eyes just kind of shut her down and didn't accept her, let's go to a movie tonight. So I think she was just feeling kind of bitter. And then she comes in there and she has so-so just, I don't know, she's expecting something maybe from Piper. And Piper's becoming one of the old girls in there. She's not the new Tinder girl anymore, and I don't think she wants to have much to
Piper's overplaying her hand as the lone wolf, though. I don't see her as the lone wolf. She might be a little tougher now, and she's certainly a little bit more prison-wary than she was when she was the Brooke of the first season, but she's no tough, hardened prison inmate, you know.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. Yeah, she's not. She's just angry. So she's having her moments, I think, of just anger.
So next we see some more charades. V is kind of in the background reading and getting made fun of by the younger women. And then Poussey learns that she's the V of the V notoriety from being in prison before.
Right.
How did they know that was her rep? How did they pin that on V?
Well, Tasty said, of course, you know, Tasty's her whatever daughter, whatever you want to call her. And so Tasty is, they're talking about her, and Tasty's like, that's V.
That's the V.
Yeah, that's what Poussey says, right? She's like that. And so they're like, you know, and everybody's heard of her except for, I think, Black Cindy hadn't heard of her. But evidently her reputation preceded her being back in there. So
V does the masterful power move of making a cake or having a cake made that Flocka brings out. And then V starts sharing it with everyone.
Well, yeah. And it wasn't just sitting there with a cake either. Here she is, and they're segregated by their ethnicity, and she's sitting there trying to get these black girls to be part of her group, part of trusting her and whatever, and the Latina girl comes out carrying a cake for her, which, I don't know, I just thought that might have some more meaning, more than just she got a cake.
Oh, definitely. She not only went over the black girls, she went over the Latinas, too.
Right.
Right. So she gives it first to Crazy Eyes, like she's special, and then to Tasty, and she asks Tasty to forgive her. And then she lets Tasty invite the other girls, which is also a pretty cool power move.
Sure.
Like, you're my lieutenant, you get to invite the lower-than-you crew.
Sure.
And then she pretty much is set as she's the moderator, she's the judge, she's the mother again. Like, what's the provider, right? The food provider is the mother.
Well, it was funfetti with chocolate frosting.
And then we see Red taking notice of this massive power play. I mean, it's Game of Thrones-ish right there. It's like somebody seeing, like, oh, no, I'm a step behind now. Somebody got, like, an advantage that I need to catch up to.
Yeah, and how do you even catch up to that, particularly in her situation, in Red's situation? But also, as Tasty is introducing V to everyone, or introducing everyone to V, V's like, oh, I know everybody, and she calls them by name. And you're right, that was a power move. You know, she's like, this is Cindy, you know, and this is Poussey. And, I mean, she goes through their names, and it was like, wow, okay.
But then the show ends, and V might have blown it all with those stale goddamn cigarettes, because we see Gloria and Alita, is that Daya's mom, Alita, smoking the cigarettes. Are like, what the hell is this crap? This is terrible.
I didn't even know cigarettes went stale like that. That goes to show what I know.
It's a product. It's a agriculture. You know, it's a food, essentially a plant product.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, how would you know stale tobacco from fresh tobacco? It's all dried, right? I mean, I'm completely ignorant on it. I would have no idea, but they could obviously tell.
Yeah, so that's it. End of episode 3.
And they fade to Crazy Eyes for You playing the 50s song.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Good catch, Michelle.
Thanks.
So, Michelle, do you want to say your Twitter name and any other information about yourself, how to connect with you?
I have a Facebook account, Michelle from TN, and I use that to comment on the stuff that we do here. So we'd love to hear any comments on facebook.com/West Coast Project. Twitter's the same, Michelle from TN, and I'd love to hear from anybody.
Okay, and then westcoastproject.com is the website, and Facebook/West Coast Project, like you said. And that's about it. Next week is a whole other hole.
Yeah.
Episode 4. I don't know. I can't even remember what's in it because they're all blurred together for me.
I can remember a lot of this one, but we'll save it.
Is this the one where they show the female anatomy of, like, I didn't know a pee came from there.
This is the one.
Yeah, yeah. So you got that to look forward to.
Yeah.
You got to remember, I think people are probably have, most people have already, if they're even listening to this nonsense from us, they've probably already seen it, you know, so it doesn't hurt to remind them.
No, I know.
Who knows? I might have learned a little something in that episode. It looks like some of the women did.
Okay. I'll definitely bring that back up with you next week.
All right. Well, I'll see you then.
Okay, Mike.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I've got crazy eyes for you, baby.